Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the non-martial arts version of Dev Patel, Mr. Spencer Williams.
I don't know why you're making a correlation between me and Dev Patel, but okay.
Well, I mean, he is the director of the movie we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
And you guys are both nerds, which is great. I mean, we're all nerds. Don't look at me like that. I'm a nerd. So take it, whatever. And speaking of nerd, also with us is intern / full-timer Amy.
Hey, I actually got marked as a nerd. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's guilty by association, so.
What guilt? I have no nerd shame.
As we continue to talk about our nerd status, we are also going to be talking about the latest review that we have, which is the recent film, actually the first directorial debut for Dev Patel, in Monkey Man. So stick around as we dive into that and talk about our thoughts on the film. But before we do, Spencer, give us them opening credits.
Tune in to brand new episodes each and every week. Now on all your favorite streaming platforms and over our website, filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
And
something, something.
Thank you.
Blue sky, something, something.
That's right. We got a website. And if you head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com, you'll find we have over 300 episodes, allegedly, of everything from anime, action, comedy, suspense, anniversary films that actually have an anniversary, Amy, and also movies that someone claimed was an anniversary and wasn't.
that's the same thing twice.
I know.
Head on over to our website
at filmlosophers.com and check our stuff out. Also, you can check out all of our stuff wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart, or Amazon Music, or probably somewhere else, something, something. We're everywhere. Look for us there at The Film Losophers. Give us a follow or a subscribe, listen in, and tell us what you think, and drop us a comment in the towel section down below. We'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. Obviously, if we had more content to go off of, there's a lot of stuff that's been going on in movie news and in the industry, but the movie we're going to view has a lot of, like, just really, really deep content that we don't want to kind of slog this entire episode down with just negative, 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 or just really heavy stuff. So we are going to mention that most recently we got another, and I don't know if this is the official, or it is the official.
Yeah. It's official.
The official drop for the official trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
Or is it Wolverine and Deadpool?
No, Deadpool and Wolverine.
Okay. The trailer itself debuted not too long ago. I want to say less than a week ago. But it is still making headways and is kind of touting to be the number one trailer in, like, the number one that was watched in 24 hours, something like that. It is definitely something that people should take notice of, because this trailer really does make you kind of, if you had any concern about the movie itself in terms of, oh, since it's going to Disney, it's going to lighten up on this, or it's not going to do that, or it's not going to, it is definitely still a Deadpool movie. I have never heard a Disney film talk about cocaine so much in my entire life. And that's just in the trailer. So did you guys get a chance to see it?
Yes.
Oh, okay, thoughts?
Oh, I didn't know that was the lead in for, like, let's talk about it. It was just like, did you see it? We're like, yes, we did.
This isn't a classroom. You can talk.
I don't.
Although you spend most of your time raising your hand in the middle of conversations, which is really
weird.
You
also close out every show with class.
So, Spencer,
dismissed.
Did you see the trip? Yeah. We are the teachers.
I'm an intern.
That's your fault. Spencer.
Intern teacher.
Intern teacher. Yeah.
Someone talking about the trailer, Lord above.
Yes, I definitely was at work when this came out, and I definitely paused for 2 minutes and 40 seconds to watch it.
You only saw it once?
No, I started working again, and then I played it again.
Oh, okay. So you were playing it while you were working.
Yeah.
Okay.
This movie is going to be the movie that people talk about for a bit because everything else on the Marvel horizon is kind of like whatever. So, you know, if Kevin Feige can position this movie well, it might actually turn Deadpool and Ryan Reynolds himself into Marvel Jesus and save everything.
That is pretty true. I mean, yeah.
But that seems like a tall order. But
we'll I mean, it's Ryan Reynolds, and in the persona of Deadpool, it's like anything's possible right now. I think one of the biggest things that you kind of hit the nail on the head is the fact that the current state of the MCU is going nose down into the bleak black like abyss of just, you know, absurdness because of the way everything panned out with. What is his name? Jonathan Majors and everything that has happened with the fallout of the storylines thus far, the lackluster releases and progressions of movies like Blade. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of things that you can't control and there are a lot of things that you can control. And most of the stuff that they could control, they swung and missed on. So I think this is an absolute like defibrillator to the MCU right now because it's funny. I was literally I kind of got upset because, you know, they were talking about someone that I'm familiar with, we're acquaintances, but there was this post that I saw about how Marvel fans or the fandom, the toxic fandom of Marvel is that they constantly are without understanding of the overall trajectory for the MCU, and they're constantly asking this question and blah, blah, blah. And then they posted a clip, which, mind you, it wasn't even a clip. It was someone recording it from their TV of John Campia talking about how, you know, prior to Deadpool, there wasn't really much of a direction for where the MCU is going, and maybe this will give a little bit more, you know, more ideas as to like the direction everything is going. But I feel like it's an honest question. I think it's something that we really should be, you know, asking in terms of fans of the franchise, fans of the films, you know, to kind of have an understanding of where this is going, because right now they have pulled everything that it has essentially been stated to be, you know, the next stage of the MCU. You know, there's not going to be any more King the Conqueror, obviously.
Who was a big, big bad.
He was the whole focus for this next stage, this next saga. And it's like, what are we supposed to say? Like, okay, it'll be all right. We'll just keep going. Like, no, any investor, and I got to look at it like this, because I'm paying money. We all are. We're paying money to go see these movies.
I have shares in Disney. Therefore, I have shares in Marvel as well as Star Wars. It was, hey, during the pandemic, it was cheap. And I was like, oh, boy. Sorry. It was terrible.
Are you done?
Yes.
Okay. I got to look at it as like money, you know, in terms of, you know, investing into the films when we go and see it. Obviously, as investors, we want to know that the product that we're investing in has a good, you know, journey ahead.
Okay. I guess I should say I am not an investor in Disney.
Why?
Because I didn't give them any money.
You haven't gone in to buy any ticket for
No,
a film?
I thought we were talking about stocks.
She's talking about stop listening to her.
You said investors, so I swapped
I
stocks.
Said we have to look at it kind of like as investors. When we look at, like with a movie, when we go and buy a movie ticket, we're technically investing in the movie. We're saying, I am buying this much time to sit and enjoy this product.
I don't think so. Movies are more art pieces.
You know what?
Like it's a museum, and you're going into a museum and being like, yes, I hate this piece.
But do you pay to see each piece of art? No.
If you're at the Louvre, you do.
You do not pay to see each piece of art.
It's extra to go see the Mona Lisa, or so I hear.
Ooh, I'll be able to tell you about that.
Yes, please. Tell me about the Louvre.
I'm going to France.
Yeah.
Go ahead, tell everybody so they can make sure to find out which flight you're on, and yeah, they can follow you all the way to over there. And then,
I see. So, Eddie, I see what you're saying about us giving our money to a corporation in partaking of the product that they put out, and everything that's gone on with Marvel previously that Feige has tried to contain has been interesting, to say the least. And now a lot of burned out Marvel fans were very concerned that in taking in Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool, that they were going to not only be, he was not only going to be watered down, but the direction was going to change, and so was the voice of the property. Yeah,
to some extent. Ultimately, it's like, it shouldn't be a bad thing that we have questions as to what the direction of any franchise is going. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm pretty sure everybody is literally not wanting to ask the questions and at the same time wanting to ask the questions if they plan to continue the Indiana Jones franchise. Like, why? And for what reason? And what's going to happen? Like, I feel like this is one of those situations where it's okay that we ask questions as fans, but we shouldn't really be penalized because we are curious and because we want to make sure that the fandom that we know and love is heading in a right direction. Mm. Because if there's one thing that we've known works to some extent is that collective voices bring about change. True. And when there's enough people who say things or talk about things or bring things up, sometimes, i.e. all hail the prime example of Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, sometimes things get done. Not always, but I feel like that was a conversation that someone was trying to have in regards to, oh, well, Marvel fans just need to be along for the ride and this, this, and that. And I'm like, that's fine and all, but this is based on something I know and love, as well as a lot of other people. And we're not saying that it has to be exactly like something that we've read or the voices in our head. However, we want it to be done just with justice. We want it to be done as best as possible with the best foot moving forward. Well, so,
okay, so I think Marvel specifically has a problem of like all the movies have to add up to something. Which, you know, back in the days where movies were individual stories, you didn't have to worry about that so much. Mm. But here, yeah, like, even though, like, there's been some good individual movies, they don't add up to anything now. So it's kind of a letdown because, like, an overall narrative, which is super weird because you can have individual movies that are okay, but then, like, they're kind of made worse because they don't actually help push forward this overall narrative.
Which is what I was saying about this movie.
Well, then you got all in the weeds about investors and stuff.
Well, that's because someone over here decided to talk about how she invested in the into Disney during the pandemic, which is not the question that we were talking about.
Here's what Disney needs to do. They need to recast Jonathan Majors and put back in Terrence Howard as Kang. Don't even say anything.
Huh. What? No!
Though.
Ant-Man. Maine. Just a bunch of Maine. I don't know. I don't think that's the answer.
I don't think he's scary enough to be a Kang for me, but that's just me.
I don't think you've even seen enough of Terrence Howard outside of Marvel to really give a good...
Yeah, I didn't watch Empire.
Or Hustle and Flow. Okay.
Nope.
All right. Anyway... Mm-hmm. We'll
movie
see.
News.
We'll see pretty much how things shake out and ultimately what the House of Mouse decides to unveil as part of their strategy for whatever God knows is coming up, because I know Fantastic Four is on the horizon as well as Blade as well as who knows. So we'll see.
Who knows?
Who
that's
knows?
That's where we end up.
That's where we'll end up. But that does lead us, oddly enough, in terms of who knows, to our conversation of the evening. And that is our take on Dev Patel's Monkey Man. This film has been talked about quite a bit, especially when Jordan Peele's name was added to the banner of who is promoting this film. So, needless to say, we had to talk about it. And even though it's already made its way to streaming, we still feel like it's a great opportunity to talk about this film. So, before we continue any further, Spencer, give us that official synopsis goodness.
Inspired by the legend of Hanuman, Kid is an anonymous young man who ekes out a meager living in an underground fight club where, night after night, wearing a gorilla mask, he's beaten bloody by more popular fighters for cash. After years of suppressed rage, Kid discovers a way to infiltrate the enclave of the city's sinister elite. As his childhood trauma boils over, his mysterious scarred hands unleash an explosive campaign of retribution to settle the score with the men who took everything away from him.
Directed and co-produced by Dev Patel in his directorial debut, who also co-wrote the screenplay with Paul Angunawela and John Colley. The film stars Patel, as well as Charlotte Copley. I'm going to butcher these names. I do apologize in advance. Pitabash Tripathi, Vipan Sharma, Sikander Kerr, Adithi Kalkunte, Sobita Dulipala, Ashwini Kalsakar, Makaran Deshpande, Jatin Malik, and Zakir Hussain.
Good job.
Thank you. Inspired by Patel's love of Bruce Lee movies, Korean movies, Bollywood titles, and titles and tales his father told him as a child. Inspired by Patel's love of Bruce Lee movies, Korean movies, Bollywood movies, titles, and tales his grandfather told him as a child. Dev Patel was no stranger to not only being behind the camera, but also, in front of the camera, as he suffered a number of injuries during the filming of the movie, which included a broken hand, two broken toes, a torn shoulder, and an eye infection.
Jiminy Christmas.
Yeah. Can you imagine your director being in, like, bandages and stitches and whatnot because, you know, just a couple days before he had to...
You just had to break that fish tank.
He did.
It's anger.
Another piece of info. Due to budget cuts, multiple shots were filmed with GoPros and iPhones. It's a story. Like, the information, the tale that he tells when he was doing his press junkets about... when he was trying to go through, trying to get everything shot, getting all his cameras not coming in, literally using just GoPros and cameras to film certain scenes. It is bonkers. Mm-hmm. I think you read that article too as well, right, Amy?
Yeah, it was Variety as well. They picked it up because I believe he was at the premiere and they were like, well, what was it like on the set? And he was like, listen, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Like, he couldn't, they were having funding issues, the cameras broke, everything broke, he couldn't get more people in because of COVID, so he pulled everybody that he had literally, like, on the set. He's like, yeah, there was the caterer and the costumer, he's like, they were extras, like, he's, and so he went as far as he could just to keep the lights on and the movie moving, which is pretty amazing when you look at what the final product turned out to be.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that is one of those types of things where you need to really know your stuff in regards to filmmaking and directing, which is odd because he's never done either, you know, but but the fact that he made it so that it was just really, you couldn't tell. Like, the way this movie went, it just, you could not tell at all that this movie was done on iPhones and GoPros, even though nowadays most phones really have high-quality cameras attached to them. So, one last piece of information. The film was originally meant to be released straight to streaming on Netflix until Jordan Peele saw the film and, feeling that it deserved a theatrical release instead, acquired it from Netflix under his Monkey Paw Productions banner, which has a distribution deal with Universal Pictures. So that's actually really cool. That makes sense now why Jordan Peele was attached, because it wasn't just that he was a producer or whatever, whatnot, just in terms of behind the scenes during filming, but he acquired it, which I didn't realize until I actually saw the film, that Monkey Paw Productions was, you know, the distributor of it.
Oh, that's interesting because, like, the trailer very heavily looked at the Monkey Paw logo. So I was like, oh, Jordan Peele's involved with this.
Yeah, it was very much like, Jordan Peele! Dev Patel, Jordan Peele!
Yeah, yeah.
Just like that.
Just it like was. That, too. They even had, like, the voice, some voice actor in there. Like, Jordan Peele! Like one of those, like, monster truck rallies. Sunday. So that's really cool. That actually gives us a little bit more backstory as to why Jordan Peele was attached. And honestly, as we go through talking about the film, I'm glad that we're having kind of like this Robin Hood effect where someone is coming in and saving these smaller films that are being eaten up by streaming channels. Mm-hmm. And giving them actual theatrical releases.
Yeah.
I.e. all the prisoners over at Max. So, but we'll, as we dive into this film, obviously we're just going to let you know now, spoiler alert, there are a lot of spoilers to this film that we will probably discuss. We will do our best to keep it at bay. However, this is your first and last and only warning. Spoiler alert, you've been warned. Diving into this, one of the things that someone had said about this film was this is this movie is John Wick in Mumbai, which I read that and I'm like, yeah, no, but I can see where they're drawing inspiration from that. And I bring that up because I feel like ever since the inception of the John Wick films, mm-hmm. Much like earlier films that have that changed the way like fight choreography is in films and whatnot, gunfighting and certain fight scenes, either the choreography, even the way it's filmed, has changed because of, you know, those movies. John Wick movies have kind of changed the way a lot of filmmakers are stylizing certain scenes. And so I kind of want to get your guys' experience. Have you guys seen all the John Wick films?
Yes.
No.
You haven't?
I haven't seen two.
You haven't seen part two?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Of all of them, you haven't seen the second one?
For sure, yeah.
But you saw the third one?
Yeah.
Well, which takes place immediately after the second one.
Well, I saw the third one first, so that's fine.
Yeah, but so did you see the first one?
Yeah, I saw the third one, the first one after I saw the third one.
So you saw the third one, and then you saw the first one, but you didn't see the second one, which immediately happens minutes before the third one starts.
Yeah, but if you hadn't seen the second one, you're fine with the gaps.
I have no dog in this fight in regards to watching it, but hey, we watched it.
And then you saw the fourth one, at least, because yes. I believe we reviewed it here on the show.
Yes.
3-1-4. And Ames, you said you've seen all four.
Correct.
What are your guys' thoughts on this type of style? Like when it comes to the gunfighting and the hand-to-hand combat and even the stylization of how it's filmed. How do you guys feel about the John Wick films and kind of its impression on filmmaking today? And I don't say that like it's been all these years, but like, let me see when the first John Wick movie came out.
To be very honest, because it said the JW effect.
I thought it was Jehovah's Witness.
I thought it was Jurassic World, Jehovah's Witness. I was like, J-dubs? What are we going at? So I was like, Jehovah's Witnesses in the movie?
So here's the thing.
I did not expect John Wick at all.
It's been 10 years since the first John Wick.
Seriously?
2014.
Yikes.
So in the last 10 years, filmmaking has changed. Okay, personally, and this is how I feel, because we've seen kind of the impact the John Wick movies have had. I mean, just this year alone, you're looking at movies like this one, Monkey Man. You're looking at, what is that, Boy Kills World?
Boy Kills World.
Bill Skarsgård. I mean, a lot of the movies nowadays are taking that type of approach to creating films that they have this, like, this specific, you know, saturation of a certain color, whether if it's a blue hue or a red hue, or the like, the vibrancy of certain colors, the like manicness of some of the fighting scenes to seem more visceral and raw, but still can't, the camera is following literally the movement of the punch rather than the movement of the person. Like, there's a lot of stylization to a lot of it. Do you guys feel like in the last 10 years, the John Wick films have really, you know, change the way a lot of filmmakers are making movies nowadays? Or is it just a kind of one-off? It's like not so much that it's something that you would say is a massive impact, or would you say it's like massively impacted everything?
I really feel like this depends on what director we're talking about and what they're trying to do. Because like, like John Wick has like kind of like brought in like a new element into like stylizing fights.
Yeah.
And there's even like a fight in this movie where I was very like, you know, oh, this really like has that like vibe of something from John Wick.
Yeah.
Without being John Wick.
Are you talking about the kitchen scene?
I was talking about the bathroom one.
Yeah, with the fish tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this movie is able to make it its own, so that's why I think we're cool here. But specifically, I don't get that like vibe super often from movies where I'm like looking at it and be like, oh, John Wick. Like, because in this movie, like, I just made that connection without even really thinking about it, just based on what I was seeing.
Yeah.
But like over like the last 10 years, I'm sure I've thought about that once or twice, but not a whole lot. So either I'm missing all the movies where they do copy the John Wick stuff, or it's just not showing up that much, which is what I think it kind of is. Like, I'm sure there's like things people have learned and definitely like take like bits and pieces that like really work and like can be put into multiple applications. But
well, I mean, like, so ever since, so we're looking at John Wick, but ever since John Wick came out, like we've had movies like Nobody, that movie with the guy from Everybody Calls Saul, that utilized that fighting style in a way that really wasn't really necessary. Did you see that movie? Okay. He's essentially this nobody person who ends up standing up for himself, and then people like start coming after him and all that kind of stuff, like whatever. Atomic Blonde is another one that utilized that style. Same thing with the saturation of color.
Which was originally a comic book.
Yeah, but when you film it, that's a different thing.
But they took hints from the comic book to do that, much like they did with Sin City.
I understand what you're saying, but it is still stylized once it's filmed.
Well, it's interesting that you should bring up the John Wick comparison, because Dev Patel actually spoke about this on a podcast, and what his actual, like, the comparison has been that it's John Wick, but he wasn't looking at that originally. He was looking at Korean auteurs, so Old Boy, The Man from Nowhere,
The Raid,
A Bittersweet Life, to I Saw the Devil. That's what he was looking at when he drew inspiration for Monkey Man, and not specifically John Wick. But in relation to other movies who are taking that type of style and driving it forward, we've seen an uptick in it. Same thing like when The Matrix came out, because it was so inspiring that we were seeing hints of Matrix moments in other films. I do see that John Wick's kind of flavor has been seeping into other films, and particularly action movies.
Yeah, which is what I'm saying now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, all the way through things like, you know, even movies that are more recent, like Sisu or Violent Night. You know, Sisu was literally from the production company who did John Wick. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. This is what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm saying there are fingerprints of that franchise. And yes, by proxy, because more than likely John Wick, and I haven't done the research, so I don't know, but I'm pretty sure John Wick was inspired by, you know, Jang Wong-hoo's movies and a lot of these other types of, you know, films that really heighten the sense of you know, the visceralness of the fight scenes. I mean, who can forget that insane fight scene from Old Boy in the hallway
sequence, you know, which everybody has a hallway sequence now. Like, I think that was one of the first times when in Netflix, when they did Daredevil. They had the hallway sequence. They're like,
they did a hallway sequence in every series.
Yeah, in every series after that, once people knew about the Old Boy hallway sequence. And so in that case, when we look at John Wick, you see there is hallway sequences in almost every single one, or something very akin to it, where I know there's a hallway sequence in the first one, but I can't remember if in the second one there was.
There's one in the second one, and
there's the stairwell, because the stairwell in the fourth.
Because the second one is the one where he fights Ruby, whatever her name is.
Oh,
in
that's
that.
Right.
And then the third one is when he has that fight sequence in with the two guys that are actually from Old Boy. They're actually in Old Boy. The two brothers, the ones that are related, mm-hmm. Where they're like, it's an honor to fight you, John Wick, you know, kind of thing like that.
That's right.
And I'm pretty sure in the fourth one, but I don't recall the fourth one all that much.
I just remember
the
staircase sequence.
Well, and with the fourth one, you have, because in the fourth one, you have it with Donnie Yen, who Donnie Yen is a, you know, just
Asian
tactician. Gem. He is just a phenomenal actor and fighter and all things great. But I say all that to say, there are fingerprints, and obviously something is always going to be inspired by something else. So with that said, we saw the film. Spencer saw it well before I did, because Spencer is more prone sometimes to actually doing his homework than other times.
I saw it 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then you caught up on the little bit that you missed. This week. So you're all covered.
So explain what, because you keep talking about this, you keep saying the beginning. What did you miss?
Oh, not much. Like,
to Spencer, that's a good first quarter of the film.
No. It was really just the opening where, like, the mother is explaining to kid, which I didn't know. I had no idea what this guy's name was. I just assumed I missed it.
It's in the credits as kid. Like in the credits, his name is Kid.
Yeah. So I just been calling him Dev Patel. So
I'm down with that.
Yeah. So I missed the intro with Hanuman and like talking about it. So like later on in the movie, I was like, wow, that kind of came out of nowhere. But I'm gonna hope. Like anytime I felt that, I was like, I hope it was in that first 6 minutes. And then I showed up when there's that flashback of the cop in the fire, and Dev Patel's like looking at himself in a mirror. That's where I came into after the title.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right. So that's all that you missed. And then you were able to re-catch up on it because I ended up buying it on streaming. I'm like, we haven't had a chance to watch it. I haven't had a chance to watch it. So I might as well just buy it because it looks like it's going to be a great movie anyway. So I bought it.
Worth on it.
And Spencer's like, are we finally going to review it? And I'm like, yes, I just need to finish it. When I finish it, you can watch it. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, and then I ran out of time. So now we're relying on my 3-week-old memory of this movie.
Yes.
With it's the okay. we'll other movies I watched in between.
Yep. That's true. So after initially seeing the film, let's start with Spencer since his mind is seeping. What were your first initial thoughts? Your first impressions right outside the gate?
Okay. I was like, this is pretty good. I like this movie. This movie. Like there was a few things I feel like they telegraphed like really early, but I'm not sure why they did that. But like other than that, like it didn't need to be a mystery. Like it did a good job. Like there was like, you know, he had plotted a course for himself and he was gonna go right to the top. Mm-hmm. He did that. And I was like, this is good. I like it.
Yeah. What about you, Ames? Since you're on your phone over here.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
I'm not wearing my glasses, so if you see me like going cross-eyed, you know.
No one's
going
to. No, this is not a video. No
I'm
one
audio
will see
Spencer.
Only. Audio only.
I looked at you, Spencer.
Spencer is used to you going cross-eyed. Don't worry.
Wow.
You're welcome.
So, first impressions, this movie, I knew it was going to be good. I didn't know to what extent and how many different points we're going to be hit on and how loudly. So I have many things to talk about.
Okay. That's not bad. Same here. I after initially watching this movie the first time, I literally just felt like we are witnessing the beginnings of something great within Dev Patel, the director. Mm-hmm. We have seen Dev Patel, the actor, and how phenomenal he can be in those roles. However, his directing and his usage of cinematography and choreography, as well as kind of putting all this together with his screenwriting ability. I think this is something that we need to bear witness to and talk about because this is only going to be the first of many. I mean, it's literally the first. It's the same things that we said after a lot of us saw Get Out. Like, this is going to be the first of many. So let's go ahead and dive in and let's talk about the performers of the film. Now, obviously, we can talk about Dev Patel. If you've been living under a rock and you have no idea who Dev Patel is, Dev Patel has pretty much made a name for himself in what?
Initially started Slumdog Millionaire. That was like the one where everybody lost their ever-loving minds. And it was so monumental that even The Office brought up, what was it, like season 7 or 8, where they had a mock version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and referenced Slumdog Millionaire in the writing. Like, am I the only person that remembers that at this table at this moment?
I don't remember that.
Okay, either. Well, I remember it. But it's also the Marigold Hotel, the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. He's been in that, as well as the sequel to that. He's in the one we do not speak of ever. Spencer knows.
That's actually the first thing I saw him in.
That's the very first thing you saw him in?
Yeah.
Oh, Spencer.
I actually thought he was good there.
He was good. He wasn't the problem
no,
in that
one. No,
he was
not.
He's also in The Green Knight, which I loved. And then, oh, he was in Chappie? What?
Yeah, he was in Chappie. So he was also in Lion, which is the one about the adoption. He was phenomenal in The Newsroom, the incredible series that lasted for only, I think, 2 seasons, 2-3 seasons. with Jeff Daniels. He was phenomenal in that as well.
He was also really good in The Personal History of David Copperfield, which is based on the book. Very nice choice. Sorry.
Okay. obviously in Hotel Mumbai, which was a great film, The Wedding Guest. I mean, he's got a real decent filmography. I mean, obviously he got his start in a movie called Only Yesterday as a voice actor for Toshio.
Yeah, but that's not my favorite Studio Ghibli movie, but it's okay.
Daisy, he also had a stint on a TV show called Skins.
That's a sexy one.
I'm just telling you what he was on.
I'm sorry. So if we're talking like, Spencer, so the first time you saw Dave Patel, my gosh.
I know.
You have to split it. The first time you saw Dev Patel was in the movie We Do Not Speak About, in the role where he was actually good.
Yes.
Man. What about you, Eddie? When was the first time you saw Dev Patel?
The first time I saw Dev Patel in anything, I think it was Slumdog Millionaire. But that was, I didn't see it when it came out. I saw it probably a few years after it came out because I did not go and see The Last Avatar, The Last Airbender. I didn't see it in theaters.
We don't speak of it right now. Not
so.
That. Oh, I saw that movie in theaters.
Yeah. I did too.
So, yeah, but my first exposure with him was Slumdog Millionaire.
Same. So. And that was like, he did really, really good in that. Like, it was fantastic. And then, yeah, I saw the movie We Do Not Speak Of. And he wasn't bad. That's the problem. But in Monkey Man.
Yeah, are we getting back to that? Or
I got distracted. So in Monkey Man, if we're talking about Dev Patel, you can't really talk about just his acting in this because he's literally wearing every single hat. And I don't know if we want to isolate just his performance in this or do we want to, like, how do we
want to... So we're talking about Dev Patel. So if we're talking about Dev Patel, then just...
That means anything.
That means everything. So...
I think that's the problem.
I mean, obviously, he did do a lot of his own stunts. Or not, he didn't do a lot of his own stunts, but he was very active in a lot of the stunts that he did. He had actually been training in Taekwondo since he was 10. He had earned his first Dan Black Belt in March of 2006 at the age of 16.
Holy smokes.
So he's got, obviously, like, history in martial arts and whatnot. And his ability to be as active as he needed to for this role, as well as maintaining the kind of cognizance of having to direct the film while running and doing all these things, it speaks highly. We talked about this. Who did we talk about this about when we were saying about their ability to direct and act at the same time? I believe not too long ago, we had made the comment about how the movie was okay. Creed 3. He did a good job. However, it probably could have been better had either someone else directed in it or had he just directed it without acting in it. But he needed to act in it because he's the lead character role. This was one of those instances where Dev Patel both acted well and directed well. And that's really hard to come by for a lot of first-time directors. It's very, very rare and kind of like lightning in a bottle, but the fact that he was able to pull it off and still produce a really great product just speaks highly to the capability of Dev Patel. Also for the fact that, he's only 26? He's only like 34? Dang, okay.
Dang, okay.
So... Dev Patel is phenomenal in this movie. And on top of that, he is not one scene that he does where he's emotionally conveying, you know, whatever he is feeling. None of it seems phoned in. All of it seems genuine. Even on the scenes where you would feel like he could probably take a step back and not be so. He is absolutely, you know, in the feels throughout this entire movie. He is engaged with his emotions and it shows really well. Yeah, I have to give props to where props are due. Dev Patel really worked on a whole nother level when it came to developing not only the character for this film, but also acting it out and directing it. So, any other thoughts on Dev Patel? Before I continue, Spencer.
No.
No. Okay.
Really? No? Okay.
All right. Well, I want to kind of bring up as well another great performer in this film that I thought probably won't get a lot of conversations or a lot of talk about it, but I feel like it is absolutely someone who should be mentioned. Vipin Sharma, who played Alpha. I really have to say that I feel his role, although it was only in the last third of the film, still gave a lot of kind of groundedness to our main protagonist. And honestly, they really kind of added a lot of the connecting points to the main character for the audience. I really did like, I liked their role. I liked what they did. I even liked the whole inclusion of that aspect of society, especially for East Indian culture. The fact that there is conversations about either transvestites or those who...
The third gender?
The third gender, those who identify as their gender by, you know, and by other genders outside of typical standards. It having that included into the conversation for this film was not only a bold choice, but in order to do something like that, you have to have someone lead it well in that particular portion. And I feel like the role of Alpha, played by this actor, did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I think it was very unexpected. And the third gender that is identified is, I believe they're called Hijra. So it's H-I-J-R-A.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not only amazing to see Vipin as leader, as counsel to Kid, because I keep going to Dev, but that's wrong. To Kid. But also the way the community there not only thrived, but supported each other, which is something that really, I think, when we start talking about characters, was something that had been missing for such a long time. And then finding community within the outcast and having such a strong, nurturing leader that Vipin portrayed was just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it very much embodied almost a sense of both fatherly and motherly type of care and keeping of Kid in those scenes, because ultimately it leads up to a really intense action sequence that leaves Kid in a very precarious, you know, position, you know, health wise and whatnot, and ultimately Alpha and their group, their community, ultimately find him and bring him in and then care for him. And it's like this recognition of, you know, loving humanity for humanity and not for the rules and roles that are, you know, thrust upon us by society and culture. And this speaks very highly. I'm pretty sure Dev Patel is going to get a lot of heat for it, but this speaks highly to even just the nature of society today and how things like this, people's livelihoods and the way they choose to exist in this world are called into question because it disrupts certain cultures or certain communities' comfort level. And if there is any known, you know, religious culture, you know, that's very devout, I mean, a lot of East Indians are in that culture. You know, they carry that sense of religiosity, if you want to say. And to be able to utilize this stance and to talk about it, it's very bold of Dev Patel. And it's very telling of his willingness to push the envelope. You know, what do you think, Spence?
I think that when we get into the section where you're in like the, I don't remember what this place is called, but the Alpha's like compound, if you will. Like, there was a bit of a tone shift during it. And I was like, it was very like nurturing type tone shift. And I was like, it was a real stark contrast between like the beginning of the movie and here.
Yeah.
Which I actually thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. I feel like exactly like you said, the first half of this film was just nonstop grittiness, go, 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 action. And in fact, you can kind of see the shift and how its impact on Kid even, you know, surfaces when, you know, he goes back to fight those people again the second time around. And it's not so much of a you know, a bloodbath on him the second time around. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Ames, Spencer?
Are we talking about, we're still talking about acting?
Yeah.
I want to bring up, they go by Pito Bash, which is their first name, who plays Alfonso. He's the weird lackey, not lackey. Like when you see him in the trailer, he talks about his car, but it's a tuk-tuk that he calls Nicki Minaj, which is ridiculous. There was so much unexpected brevity from somebody that I was like, this person is not a good person. Like, I can't get behind him. Also, to find out that I'm slightly taller than him makes it even more, like, it makes it funnier as I'm the shortest person that's currently working on this show. But he did a really great job of balancing, like, the genuine camaraderie that he had for Kid. And, like, he's a sleazeball that's like, we're trying to make money and we're trying to survive. Like, it was really unexpected.
I'm co-signing that because, like, first scene he's in, I'm like, I'm probably just going to want to end up punching this guy by the end of the movie. But no, but, like, as the movie goes on, you're like, oh, man, he's been left in a rough place by a Kid, so I wonder what's happening with him. And he still shows up sometime, and you're like, are you just running from everyone in the last pass of this movie? I was like, man, that's rough, buddy. So he's good, though. He's great.
He definitely... really does embody that complicated friend role that just about every single film that has somebody like Dev Patel in it usually has that complicated friend dynamic. And it isn't always a hit, but this particular actor really does nail it down. It's definitely a role that can't be just easily walked into by anybody. And I feel like this actor had the tools to be able to do it and pull it off. And he was funny at doing it. Like, it wasn't just like a one-off, like, oh, he's got some charm. No, he was actually genuinely funny in the role. So kudos to him. Was there anyone else you wanted to add, Ames?
Sikander Kier, he's the guy that played Rana. Who, oh my goodness. If we want to talk about straight up just scary presence.
If we want to just talk about jawline, like, that man had jawline for days.
He really did.
For someone like who I've honestly, unfortunately, I've never had the pleasure of seeing anything else he's been in. But for him just appearing out of nowhere, doing that profile look and seeing that jawline that juts out as far as like a diving board, this man's jawline could cut glass. So, I mean, there's that. Effortlessly. I was literally just scrolling through pages just to see information, and it goes back to the trailer for Monkey Man, and it was on that part of the trailer where he turns and his jawline is just boom right there. It's like 3D. It almost hit me. Computer almost knocked over. But yeah, he plays a really good dirtbag in this movie.
Yeah, and I think it was entirely... First off, it was entirely... entirely. The word did not sound right in my mouth for a minute.
You were struggling there.
I know. It was on again... I think one of the things that you'll come to find from me for this review is that unexpected is the word that's coming out consistently, because this isn't I did not come in with the expectation that this was going to be a lackluster film. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know what was there or who was presenting it. Mm-hmm. And it is Sikander, right?
Sikander Kier.
He was... The sense of foreboding and how small, mind you, I did watch it on streaming because I didn't get to see it in the theater. It was a time thing. I felt so small in his presence on screen, which the way it was shot, like, we're going to talk about that. But literally every time you're like, this guy's a bad guy and he can hurt me. like, it was uncomfortable. And I think that's kind of fun for me to be able to say about an actor who I have no prior recollection of, that their presence alone was something that was greatly unsettling.
Right. Yeah, like near the end of the movie when they actually go to back before the beginning of the movie when like he was like tearing down that village, I was like, yeah, he was just full on display of how terrifying he could be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I was like, dang, he's good.
He's a very good actor.
And a lot of it is just his presence, like his ability to carry himself in a way that really does strike the audience as like, I am quite literally the alpha in this scenario, in this situation. I am the man who has all things and you must go through me kind of thing. And honestly, you see it a lot in certain spaces. Well, I take that back. You don't see a lot in spaces where typically they are like the second to last final boss. You know, they're the protector of the main boss. They're a protector of the big boss kind of thing. And so they're usually formidable. They don't always get that right. They don't always knock that out of the park. However, with this particular actor, they swung for the fences and they hit a home run because everything about him oozed like not only like jerkiness, but it also oozed like this powerhouse sense of ability to, you know, just destroy. He was absolutely phenomenal in the role. Yeah.
Agreed.
Was there anybody else?
Yeah, because I know the one that you're pushing at. Charlton, I can never pronounce his
last. Charlton Copley?
Yes.
I mean, he was okay.
Now, you bring it up because, so, quick backstory. I was forced to watch the A-Team movie.
Okay.
And
I don't think Spencer's seen that one.
I have not.
It's interesting, Spencer. But Charlton Copley is in that movie. And I thought he was an absolute delight and he was super duper fun and super duper crazy. And then he shows up in this, which is complete 180 from who he is in the A-Team. But then I also realized he played King Stefan in Maleficent. So it made sense. But he was really weird and good as like the fight owner / announcer / fixer. I don't know, what would you even call him in
the
this?
Vince McMahon of this place.
Yeah.
That's yeah. So shout out to him because I like him.
Okay. Well, sure. So moving forward, let's go ahead and talk about the filming style of this movie, because I feel like there is, as we mentioned at the beginning of this movie, at the beginning of this conversation, there's a lot of nods that Dev Patel uses towards certain things. Obviously, with a lot of his fighting sequences, you get a lot of course, you know, Korean fight movies. The Raid is a really big influence on this one, obviously, with it being one of the movies where the fast-paced action sequences with actual martial arts really kind of took off. It actually originally started with Undisputed 2, which came out, I believe, in 2004. I could be wrong.
Was that the one with oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name. Scott Adkins.
Yeah,
yay, I remember.
Good job, baby.
He had the big giant fat suit in, was it John Wick 4? In John Wick 4 when they did the ballroom.
Oh, yes,
the ballroom fight. Yeah, he was in a fat suit, but in Undisputed he's in a prison and he's fighting and it's like
2006. Okay,
pretty close.
So in Undisputed 2 he plays a Russian fighter in a prison out in the middle of God knows where, but the fighting style in that film, the choreography style I should say, was this fast-paced, you know, really raw and brutal type of fight sequences that looked more realistic than everything prior to, where everything prior to was like filmed very slow and very much ready for Liam Neeson. This particular film stepped it up. And then obviously we had things like The Raid and a lot of things that were coming out of Korea as references to how we were going to be moving towards in the future. Obviously inspiring things like John Wick and Atomic Blonde and all these other things that took up that fighting sequence as well, since Amy wants to utilize that.
I just made a point of
noting. You're right. I'm actually giving you credit.
It happens so rarely. Spencer, I can see why you didn't understand what to do.
First, you politely introduced me at the beginning of this, and then this. I don't know what to do.
So yeah, the fighting sequences in this film really do lend itself to a lot of Deb Patel's favorites. But I want to talk about also the shooting style, because as we stated with Sikander Kier, the presence of him being so foreboding and so menacing wasn't really all that feasible until the right angles were created. True. And like Spencer mentioned, that whole scene where you see him on that hill and everything's burning and he turns and he looks and like you see him in that profile state and it's like, okay, this person is in charge. That's because of the cinematography.
Yeah.
Were there any scenes that you guys really liked in terms of the either the shooting style, fighting style, choreography, things that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So everybody calls it the John Wick treatment, but whenever you get those big direct color, like colored back, light colored backgrounds, and then you have the person creating either a negative space or they're kind of like too kind of toned, it always reminds me of James Turrell, who is a light and space artist, which a lot of that takes, like John Wick uses it a lot. So there were moments in this, especially in the third act, where we saw it where he's moving up the, he's moving, essentially moving up the fortress or moving through the castle to get to where he needs to for the big, the final boss battle. Mm-hmm. So we saw some of that, which I really liked. I also liked, really, I don't think that with a with fully traditional cameras, you would have, the feeling of it being as visceral as it was would have been as apparent. The fight sequences when he is before and after training, with the, I'm going to butcher it, guys. I'm so sorry. The Hydra, not the Hydra, the Hera.
Hishra?
Yeah. I'm never going to pronounce it right. I got to find, they've got like a million other names too. But after training with them, seeing the way the shooting styles had changed from the beginning, from the first act to the third act, was really, really cool to see. And you start kind of noticing the necessity of the way not only it was edited, but the way that it was shot to get kind of like that closer, not fully voyeur, but it felt kind of like it.
Felt like you were up in people's faces.
Yeah. I mean, was that a good or a bad thing, Spencer?
I think it was a good thing, especially during some of the fight sequences. Just like, even like, it just felt like, you know, you were just there following along with them in certain ones. Like, the one that stood out to me was the bathroom one. I really liked that one.
Yeah.
Just like... him trying to use the environment to his advantage and then like it being turned on him like quite often. I was like, this is not going how I thought it would. Like, this is actually really interesting. The fact that he wasn't like, you know, I feel like that's the difference between here and John Wick for like, not in the shooting style, is that like John was very like seasoned professional while Kid is not.
Yeah. He's, yes. He's very green in the fighting sequence part. Yeah, and I have to admit, like, a lot of the scenes did give me a reminiscent of like things like from Tony Jaa's The Protector. If you ever seen that one, the whole sequence where you literally follow him in one single shot, where he literally is fighting people as he goes up this spiral kind of staircase, so to speak, in this huge room, and he's throwing people off and he's fighting whatever. But also, I get a lot of like even Jackie Chan with the usage of like items and whatnot in his fighting sequence, especially in the kitchen fight sequence where he's using everything at his disposal, which, as we've seen previously as well with another martial arts actor that we've known, Donnie Yen uses that as well in his fighting style, which he used in John Wick 4. Mm-hmm. But also outside of that, he also has used it in other previous films that he's done. You can tell, though, that Dev is wanting to make sure that he honors all these different, like, innovators in the industry, giving them, you know, homages in certain sequences and whatnot. I really did appreciate the usage of strong color saturations in certain scenes where the fighting or the scene was so intense that it needed to have the colors mirror exactly what you were feeling or how the, you know, how the characters in the scene were feeling. I mean, from the strong blue hue saturation in the sequence of fighting in the kitchen to the shades of red and gold in one of the VIP rooms where they're all fighting along with the Hishra, which is a great scene, to even the rich purple hues of the VIP room upstairs when he's fighting Sikandar, and then to the definitive light and dark saturation colors that are in that final scene.
Mm-hmm. Especially with that mural. That mural was absolutely gorgeous. Like, it was so well, not only was it well lit, but the staging of that sequence did so much to not only speak to the story and the themes within, but it was just like, it was a masterpiece to kind of watch.
Well, and if we were to break down that one scene, like, even because we're not given a lot of time with our main antagonist, who is Baba Shakti, played by Makran Deshpande. But he is this religious leader who is essentially swaying certain people groups and whatnot into voting for whomever, and throwing his religious weight around. But also he is responsible for certain corporations or whatnot taking over villages and lands that aren't theirs and utilizing the police to take it over. And so he is a really bad guy without really telling you he's a really bad guy. And you don't have a lot of time to see that. In fact, you don't really realize how heinous this person is until you get to the third act.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Even then, well, in that third portion of the film, it starts to divulge, like, he was there, he was one of the people.
I mean, but even before that, it even,
I mean, just because a person appears slimy doesn't mean that they're always bad.
I mean, like, I don't know. The movie, I feel like, did a good job, like, without explaining what he did. That, like, because, like, near the beginning of the movie, when he first shows up in, like, a TV interview, I'm like, okay, so the movie is either making this guy the big bad, or, like, he has to go to him to learn some magical truth and then beat up the commissioner or whatever.
No, very true. I feel like if they made that any more, yes, there was certain obvious calls at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
However, if they made that character any more complicated, then we would have to divide our attention from the evolution and the growth of Dev Patel's character along with our main antagonist and try to figure him out.
Right.
And I think it just had to be, like, stated right at the beginning, like, we're putting this bad guy sticker on him. Everybody see the bad guy sticker?
Remember, you're, he's good? A bad guy.
Remember, he's the bad guy.
That one.
We'll come back to it later.
We'll come back to it later. But I feel like, going back to that third act, like, I feel like we get in that scene when he gets upstairs, when he gets to that penthouse, we see the absolute best way to understand Baba Shakti's whole methodology of how he sees the world. And in it, the most greatest of ways, it is how his sandals are made. Because his sandals, he talks about them, how his sandals have something on the front of them. It talks about peace.
It's a prayer.
It's a prayer, essentially. And that he walks in that, which means that that's how he lives his life. But at the same time, he has retrofitted his shoes, his sandals, to have spikes in them that he can remove and use as weapons. So in the midst of searching for peace, Baba Shakti is ready for war.
Mm-hmm. And well, also, those shoes aren't, they were made, he brings up that they were made for him by some person who was so devout, and that he had written this protection and peace prayer around the outsides of the sandals. And then legit, he's got like a shiv, like the toe bit
in each, in each sandal. Let's not put it lightly. It is one for each toe, like one for each foot.
That's the only thing. It's literally like a little piece of wood, and then it's the shank that's keeping it together, and that's how he steers it. So this man legit has like shanks between his toes, and that's how he's been walking. Like,
yeah. But I think that's a really great way to highlight pretty much the depths to which this antagonist will go to get what he wants. Even in the effort of touting that he promotes peace and is pushing for, reconciliation. He isn't. He is ready for war. Mm. Yeah, I really liked that third act. I feel like that third mm-hmm. act was a really great way to kind of do the whole break out of the cocoon kind of portion of most films. The trope where you get, oh, you know, the main antagonist is actually doing a training montage and he's going to do this and training montage kind of thing. And then all of a sudden he's going to come back and he's going to, you know, whoop tail and totally demolish the enemy and he's going to come out the victor. Go America kind of thing. Like,
I mean, the training montage is here, but it has such a sense of community and a sense of beauty and strength and fun. Like, I don't need Eye of the Tiger. I don't need We Go to Russia and We're in the Barn or Punching Trees.
Hearts on fire. Yeah.
There you go.
But it was a training montage in and of itself. But it carried such like compassion and earnesty and space to grow that it didn't feel forced.
Well, and in it as well, it showed growth and progress. Like, it showed not just his recognition of how to do something, but it showed his learning of how to do it right mm-hmm. and how to do it within the nature and rhythm of himself. And that is how he was able to, that is how that whole training montage goes into the effect where there's enough confidence in his ability that he hands it off to someone else to try to do playfully. And I mean, my God, that person just was powerful. It was insane. But yeah, that whole third act, breaking out of that cocoon, that coming of coming to accepting and understanding who they are, it just really was a great scene for me. I actually really liked it.
Yay.
So, was there any issues you guys had with the movie?
Honestly, not really. Like from what I can remember 3 weeks ago, like, there is nothing that, like, glaringly stood out as problematic. Even the thing of, like, oh, this is the bad guy. Like, that's not that big of a deal. Like, it's not like we need, like, it's a murder mystery and we need to keep something secret. Like, this movie was actually really good for, like, a first time directing. Like, yeah. That's really what I come on. So I'm, like, very impressed with them right now.
Yeah, I don't think I could see any issues because, again, as a first outing and with everything that was going on still, not only is there a product that was made, but his voice, and I believe his voice and what he was choosing to not back down from in terms of story, not only lives but breathes through his work, and it was actually fun to watch.
Very fun. Yeah, it was very fun. So.
What about you?
I don't have any issues. Like, I feel like if there was any issue, honestly, I would probably want another, and this is kind of odd to say, but I would probably say that he could have stretched it out another 20 minutes. I felt personally, because I feel like the movie falls at, let's see, 2 hours and 1 minute. And I feel like Dev Patel could have easily added another 20 minutes mm-hmm. to create a little bit more exposition on certain parts, or even like certain fight sequences, or even certain portions of, you know, understanding. Like, I felt like there could be more, and I'm pretty sure, like, maybe there is more on the cutting room floor that's going to make it into like a director's cut. But I feel like I could have gone for a little bit more movie in this one. Even in an effort to maybe see, you know, how the character resolves certain things at the end. I don't know. I felt like I wanted a little bit more. I'm not saying I needed an immense amount more, but I could have used a little bit more.
Well, I think I can appreciate that you wanted more, but that Dev's like, no, we're good here.
Yeah.
Which is not a thing you see terribly often these days.
Not at all. Zack Snyder.
I have no idea what you mean with his 3-hour cut of the Justice League.
Five. I thought it was four. Was it five?
Four to almost five.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. It's long.
Have you watched it yet, by the way?
Yeah, we reviewed it.
I'm just asking. Hey, take it easy. I'm just checking.
Yeah, me watching my 4:3 image on my 16:9 TV, Zack Snyder.
Truth.
I'm still not over it.
So that does bring me to our roundtable question for the evening, and that is, obviously, we've seen that Dev Patel can do an incredible work within, you know, the directing side of things. So with his next outing, what genre of film would you love to see Dev Patel take on next?
Dev Patel's Justice League.
It's
16:9.
It's Spencer. No. I think we're, no. Let's see how James
Spencer,
Gunn
Spencer
does.
Has come to my side of the table.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm okay with that.
We're talking about genre. So if you want him to do superhero, then yeah. Super.
You know what? Actually, you know what? Yes, I would like to see a superhero film.
Okay.
Because I feel like based on this, because this was very original to me, I feel like he could bring us something that's very original in a superhero, which we need originality.
Well,
also, I feel like now that I've said that, he wouldn't do that. Because,
he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, and even if you kind of think about it with Hanuman and the way that the story unfolds, it's kind of almost like a superhero story
in
a way.
No, it's not. It's like an anti-hero story because this...
Which is still considered a superhero story. Yes.
He's not a superhero.
I mean...
So anyway, is this your choice or are you just jumping on his?
Oh, I was jumping on that for a moment. But for me, I would love to give him another crack at a fantasy story. I loved what he did with Zuko in the one we do not talk about. But that was at somebody else's direction. I'm sorry. I just refuse because we're going to have another one with Dave Bautista in it coming up too. So I just can't handle it. Which... His own direction would be great to see, and seeing as I've seen him in comedies, romantic comedies, dramas, historical dramas, biographies, like there's been a stack and we know what he can do. I'd like to see him kind of veer in a direction that he hasn't really hit yet and let him explore it a little bit more. I mean, technically, Green Knight is kind of a fantasy, but not
But he didn't
really.
Direct it, though.
But he didn't direct it.
Yeah.
Then that's
so,
the thing. So
which,
this is the first one.
Which, honestly, like, moving in the direction of directing is a whole nother... I mean, he doesn't have to act in it, but we're talking about his direction in terms of filmmaking for a particular genre. So,
yeah.
You say fantasy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it'd be fun.
I think personally, and just out of my own personal curiosity, I would love to see sci-fi. I feel like Dev has such a keen eye when it comes to shooting anxiety and kind of fear and you know, panic in scenes that if you were to put his directorial efforts in, like, say, a space film where no one can hear you scream, things like that, I feel like he could absolutely knock it out of the park. I feel like his efforts in that kind of genre would really he would do to sci-fi I feel like what Jordan did for horror.
That's actually really interesting.
And honestly, it's literally taking the tools that you used here, fine-tuning them for this genre, and I feel like if he fine-tuned it well enough, he would have his like literally money-making machine of just continually pouring out sci-fi films, because I could see that working out really well. But yeah, wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and see, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? Let's start with Spencer.
This movie passes for me. It's the best thing I've seen all April. As his debut film, like, honestly, I think he should be very proud of himself. He's like, especially with that thing I did not know where he's like using GoPros and iPhones because things like this comes together so much. It does not feel like, oh gosh, I have to slap this together. Like this feels like carefully crafted. So like just really bravo. He did a fantastic job on this movie. For me, story wise, the movie is really solid. Like a lot of the actors and characters in this movie are also like, it's a movie that like is firing on all cylinders to just deliver a story that is not quite like one I've seen before. So, really did a fantastic job. I'm going to give this like 5 out of 5 monocles. It's really one that I feel like people should see.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard what you were saying, but I was also looking up that article. It's so
you got on Amy for being on her phone, and then this is for you.
I'm finding the article so I could read it to you.
Okay.
It was during a Reddit AMA during the film's April theatrical release.
4 weeks ago.
He was saying that Monkey Man was, quote, the most demanding thing he's ever done in his life because, quote, every day we faced absolute catastrophe. He said, I begged our financier not to shut us down a few weeks before principal photography. We were meant to shoot in India, then COVID hit. I lost my initial production designer and cinematographer, and the film was basically dead. Then we pivoted and went to a tiny island in Indonesia where we could create a bubble in an empty hotel for the whole crew of nearly 500 people. It was a grueling 9 months of absolute joy and utter chaos. All the locations we prepped for months at, we lost the day of, so we had to adapt last minute. The borders closed also, so I couldn't bring in lots of supporting characters. I ended up having to put every tailor, lighting guy, accountant, etc. in front of the camera. Speaking of cameras, most of our equipment broke and we couldn't fly in new stuff, so we literally shot stuff on my mobile phone, GoPros. When a crane broke, we ended up creating this camera rig from rope, which I termed the, quote, pendulum cam, which swung over a large crowd of people, then detaches, and the operators run through the crowd whilst it was rolling.
What the heck?
In other words, he went as much as he could to, I mean, this is almost guerrilla like cinematography at that point.
Yeah, no, just from listening to that story, this man went hard, and mm-hmm. like this movie feels like he is like, that's an insane story, and the movie is very much like that.
He said, speaking of tables, we only had 3 or 4 breakaway tables, so once I would perform a huge bulk of stunts, I would scream cut, and then immediately all of us would get on our hands and knees looking for all the broken pieces of wood to glue the table back together for the next shot. In a very long nutshell, every obstacle provided us with a new opportunity to innovate. Boom.
What? That sounds like a nightmare. I can't believe you made that work. That's crazy.
Ames, what about you?
Of course, this film passes for me. If you just heard the AMA straight from Dev Patel, not only was this a labor of intense love, but I believe a labor of intense joy.
Mm-hmm.
And the social commentary therein are fed to you in such a way and wrapped up. I believe Dev called it in another version, it was the Trojan horse of veggies. He was making sure you understood not only that there are the caste system, the religion being weaponized and used against, as well as to create mass hysteria within populations, and the abuse of transgender communities. It doesn't just happen in India. It is happening all over the world, and it is applicable everywhere you go, as well as police brutality and abuse of power therein. So aside from all of that, this movie is unexpected. And I have said it so many times this review, and I still don't care. Spencer said that it was worth it, and it is a 5 out of 5. And I do believe everybody needs to see it. So I'm going to get on board with that 5 out of 5, not just for the fish in the fish tank, but for every moment that man had to say cut and got on his hands and knees with his team to tape back up a table to do another shot.
Fix that table.
Fix that table, baby.
Yeah, I have to agree. This movie, it definitely passes for me. For it being Dev Patel's directorial debut, as well as his opportunity to highlight his screenwriting abilities, he knocked it out of the park, and I cannot speak any more highly about this film other than the fact that, yes, it passes, and it also gets a 5 out of 5 for me, because there is really not much you can say outside of the particular, the already used words of like phenomenal, amazing, you know, lightning in a bottle. These words, although thrown around for other reviews at times, truly resonate with this work and with this man's efforts. And I have to say that if honestly this movie was in anyone else's hands, I truly don't think we would have had the same product that we have today, thanks to Dev Patel and all his efforts. So This movie is definitely one of those ones that you should watch. And if you get a chance, definitely rent and check it out on streaming. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch us anywhere on the socials over at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Filmlosophy101, as well as Blue Sky at the Filmlosophers Podcast. You can catch all of our great antics over at Instagram, including our extra content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And I swear I've unseen so many things and I need to talk about them all. And I just haven't
even
done.
I don't know what you've unseen,
Spencer,
recently.
Spencer, I saw one today. It had Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan, and it's from the 90s. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, but she won't talk about it for another 5 months. So
we'll
much
get
like
to Steel Magnolias
much like
first.
Much like her talk about Steel Magnolias. I've talked about that. No, you haven't. So yeah. So yeah, Jane on scene. You can also catch us over at our website at filmlosophers.com. There we have allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, even movies about stuff. I drew a blank there.
Romantic
we
comedies?
Have so many stuff.
We do. We have so many stuffs. So many stuffs that you should go and see our stuff.
Yeah.
Because
check
we're
it
almost
out.
To 400 stuffs.
Yeah.
We are. I was just going to say I'm going to have to stop saying allegedly because we're obviously over 300 now at this point. So let's hope Spencer doesn't ruin 400 and we can say actual 400 this time.
I don't say this is my fault.
You can it's also check mine. Us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart, or Amazon Music. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to those platforms, tune into your heart's desire, and follow us at The Film Lossifers. Give us a listen, a subscribe, a follow, and let us know how you feel. Did you see this movie yet? Have you had a chance to see it in theaters? Did you download it? What do you think? Do you agree or disagree? Let us know your thoughts in the towel section. And if you're feeling so froggy, give us a 5-star review, because we've earned that
we
mess.
We have.
Yes, please.
That's right. This was a great episode, so we appreciate you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm still interning Amy.
Class dismissed.
See, and you said I wasn't a teacher. Like, that's classroom.